Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 8, delivered on September 13, 2018. The title of this lecture is Analytics.
Today, Analytics. Futures traders come in two flavors, speculators and hedgers. They both have to be there. The hedgers are the good guys, the speculators are the evil guys. Speculators are in it purely to make money. The hedgers are in futures in order to protect themselves from risk. The hedgers are the ones who want to move risk from themselves to someone who wants to make money off risk. And so you have the two parts of the market. And I'll explain that a little bit more, and I will also spend the time to teach you about futures contracts and hedging. I'm not going to bother to teach you about speculating. If you want to do that, then you're on your own. I'll see you when you're homeless on the streets of Chicago. But here's how it works. Essentially, what you're doing with a futures contract is you are buying the right, but not the obligation, to accept delivery of something. Do you like pork chops? I make a killer smoked pork butt. I mean, this thing is to die for. You got cayenne pepper, brown sugar, believe it or not, a little bit of coffee, and dark chocolate. I know, right? And then you roast that pig for about 14 hours until that pig can't squeal no more. Okay, now, try to stay on topic. Okay, you want to have 1,000 pounds of pork butt, okay? In 2 weeks. You've got a great party going on 2 weeks, okay? But what you want to do is you want to try to lock in the price now. Let's say the pork butt is $4 a pound right now, and you want to buy that pork butt, but you want to have the price locked at that. So you buy the contract at $4, which means that you are going to accept delivery in, let's say, 2 weeks. For 1,000 pounds of pork butt at $4 a pound, regardless of what the price of pork butt is. So if the price of pork butt goes to $8 a pound, you have the right to accept the delivery, okay? But suppose the pork butt falls to $2.50 a pound. I know, right? It's okay, though. You don't have to take it. It's the right but not the obligation to accept delivery. You paid money, you lost on buying this contract. Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. But what you've done is you have paid a price to avoid price risk on the upside. Okay, that's how a futures contract works. You are a farmer. You grow corn. Now, the nice thing is that when corn goes up in price, you make a lot more money on your fields. But if corn goes down in price, you lose money on your fields. Okay? You don't want to do that. You don't want that price risk. You just want to be a farmer. You want to grow corn. Maybe have a few cows, a few sheep, and, you know, 5 or 6, 8 or 10 kids. Okay? You don't want price volatility. So what you can do is you want a contract so that you can sell corn at a specific price. If the price of corn goes up, you lose money on this contract, but you gain money on your corn. But if the price of corn falls, you make money on the contract, even though you've lost money on your corn fields. What that does is that levels out your income. You don't win, you don't lose on your corn. You get a stability of cash flow. That is hedging. That's what we mean by hedging. The other side of the market is the speculators who are willing to take the risk on the other side. They win, they lose. But in your business, yeah, you win or lose on these hedges, but overall, your cash flow remains smooth across time, across fields, across your life as a farmer. We do the same thing with companies with diesel oil, diesel fuel. A trucking company does not want their... if diesel fuel prices go down, they make more profit. Their costs go down. But if diesel fuel prices go up, they lose money. But they're not in the business of speculating on diesel fuel prices. They're in the business of trucking, driving trucks, delivering stuff or whatever. So what we do is we create a hedge so that if diesel fuel prices go up, the trucking company loses money, obviously, on higher costs of fuel, but it gains money on the futures contract. Conversely, if the price of diesel fuel goes down, they make money, more money, because their costs are lower, but they lose money on the futures contract. The overall effect, though, is to smooth out their cash flows. They are no longer in the business of speculating on prices of diesel fuel. Banks do this. A bank will be expecting delivery of, let's say, $10 million in 4 weeks. They're going to get $10 million in 4 weeks. Now, if interest rates go up over that time, that's great because then when they get the money, they can lend it out at higher interest rates. But if interest rates go down, they're going to lose money because they can't lend the money out at very good interest rates. So what they do is they create a hedge so that if interest rates go up, they lose on the contract even though they gain on the money because they can lend it at higher rates. And conversely, if interest rates go down, they lose money because they can't lend at high rates, but they make money on the futures contract. So the hedge smooths out their cash flow. The bank is no longer in the business of interest rate speculation. It's in the business of being a bank. That's what futures contracts do. So when I'm showing you the Standard & Poor's futures contracts, these are essentially creations that say we are going to accept delivery of the Standard & Poor's portfolio at a specific price at a specific time in the future. It's the same thing. These futures contracts are in everything. There was a movie some years back. It was called Trading Places. Did you ever see that movie? It's old enough. It was Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, and Jamie Lee Curtis were the stars of it. It was completely nonsense, silly, ridiculous, corny, funny. But they explained futures contracts incredibly well. And they even showed the violence of the trading near the end of a contract's life cycle. It was real what they did. They used actual professionals to design the scenario for this movie. So if you ever want to see futures contracts in action and enjoy seeing Murphy and Aykroyd acting together, they're actually kind of funny. They're so weird together. Watch that movie. It's decent. I think it's on Netflix. I'm not sure. I think it is. What we're seeing here in this market today is that there is more speculation that prices of Standard & Poor's 500 stocks are going to go up. There's a sense that they're going to go up. So what these futures traders are doing is they are buying these futures contracts at a specific delivery price. Deliver the Standard & Poor's portfolio to me at $2,600, regardless of whether or not the price of the portfolio is $2,600. So in other words, if the price goes to $2,800 on the opening bell, they've made money. If it's below that, they're going to say, no, I'm not going to take that. I just lost my contract fee. That's all. It's a right but not an obligation. By the way, almost never do you actually accept delivery of the contract's specs. So those pork bellies, you would never have taken those. This scenario where, yeah, we got the train here and we got your pork bellies ready for you. Come and get them. Well, no, you don't have to get line up a couple of very big SUVs to go get the pork bellies. You're never going to, almost never would there actually be acceptance of delivery. You just close the contract. And by the way, futures contracts actually close every day. If you are on the long side of a contract, at the end of the day, the short side automatically applies and you're flat. You have to pay your fee. You get your winnings or you pay your losses. But that's all. And then if you keep going and you don't permanently close it, well, it just opens up automatically the next morning at whatever the price is the next morning. So futures contracts are a little bit odd that way. They are one day, and then they close with the opposite position, and then they open again without your permission, unless you say, no, 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 close permanently, if you've taken enough losses on it. There you go. That was a lot of information for you. However, most of you will be in a business where futures contracts are being done. The one thing that I warn you about, don't play the speculative game. So there are some fun examples. Corporations, actually many of them use futures contracts for hedging purposes. There's a famous computer company. Some years back, in their finance treasury department, whatever it was, they were amassing a lot of currency, money, lots and lots of money. And it's really tempting to do strange things when you've got a lot of money. This particular company was doing a lot of their manufacturing in China. And so there was this young hotshot finance MBA, I think he was, who saw all of this money, he had no supervision, and he started opening up futures contracts on the exchange rate between the yuan and the dollar. He just kept doing it. He was working with tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. Every day, he was playing futures markets on the currency exchange rate, on the spreads. And he was winning. But like every stupid gambler, every dumb gambler, every time he won, he threw all of his winnings, plus the original money, back in to roll the dice again. And he kept winning and winning until the day, with all of this computer company's money, he lost hard on a real steep drop, and his futures contracts closed so low, the margin call, in other words, at the end of every day, you have to pay your loss, the margin call, was every penny that company had in its treasury. It was over $1 billion. And that's when they noticed, what have you been doing? And he was like, they had no idea he was doing this. I mean, that son of a dog was up easily, you know, 750 million at one point, I guess, something like that. I mean, he was way up there. And that last time, he threw that and the original money back in to play it again. He got so cocky, so confident, and that's when the market just paddled his ass hard. They fired him, by the way. I should note that. And they did not give him a good recommendation letter for his next employer. Go figure. Okay, enough of that. Real quick, SPY, just to have a quick look at the spider. Actually, if you look at this, actually, we're now at the opening bell. The opening is, that's the opening price. Notice that it is up like the futures contract was. No, no, I take that back. This is still, they still haven't updated. This is still the pre-market. Okay, well, there you go. That's the pre-market. Now, back to the what we were doing before, the analytics. Let me pull up a couple of sheets here, hoping that I actually... I sure didn't. I need to pull up my financial ratios sheet. Apologies for that. Bear with me. I thought I saved that from ReggieNet. This is in ReggieNet, this financial ratios sheet. Is in ReggieNet. Excuse me. So, I think it seems to me I don't have one of them that they bring up in the book, but I do have one that is not in the book anymore. Is there some reason that the internet really sucks today? Okay, there we go. Sign in. Come on. Okay. File 2 resources. Yeah, here it is. Let me show you this real quick. It's the financial analysis formulas right there. And this gives you, first up here, I've shown you this formula for 1 year and over N years. But here are the formulas right here. Okay. Now, very quickly, just running through them. We break them down into profitability, liquidity, asset activity, market value, and then debt. And then there's this weird thing called DuPont. DuPont, don't take it too seriously. The book makes a big thing out of it. DuPont just says, if you take one ratio times another ratio, you get another of our financial ratios. What you do with this trick right here, look, in the DuPont, your net income over total assets, that's your return on assets, ROA. It actually is your net margin times your asset turnover ratio. So in other words, if you see your net income over total assets, in other words, your return on assets, is some really good number, don't stop there. Ask, okay, what these two pieces made that number? It could be the case that this is a good number, but one of these two actually sucks and the other one is really great. So in other words, you can't look at just one ratio sometimes. You want to look at how that ratio was created. So for example, what you could have is you have a really good return on assets. Let's say 20%. But what's doing that is that you are cranking your inventory turnover at a staggering rate, but your actual net margin kind of sucks. Your net margin is actually pretty low, but you're turning over your inventory so fast as a percent of sales, of assets, that it masks that underlying problem you have. I'll show you a little bit of that later, but these ratios are somewhat, some of them are more important than others, and you'll see me focus on some of them more than I will others. So for example, in the analytics sheet, the ratio analytics sheet, right here, going from beginning to end, the ratio, you see I pull in a couple just to look at some growth rates. And then I go down the list here and I do these activity ratios, liquidity ratios. I don't do all of them. I'm focusing more on the ones that you might have be of interest to you as an analyst, as a starting out in analytics. But now, to pull a company, need a company that's not going to give some weird ratios. That means that we would like to have one that's profitable, because some ratios, actually, if you see a negative, technically, you should say NA, not applicable. So, by the way, just to start you off, suppose that I have, in this case, we're going to use Edgar's financial statements to do it. And so there are only 2 years of balance sheets. So in a case like that, if anything has a balance sheet item in it 2 years back, you would say equals NA, open parenthesis, close parenthesis. That is Excel's way of saying not applicable. To do it even more in a better way is you would say equals if some parameter is error, I don't know, C6, C18, let me do that. Then, NA, otherwise, C6. Oops. And when you do that, what happens is if the Excel calculates something that has a zero in the denominator or something like that, what will happen is it will report back not applicable. Otherwise, it will report the number it calculates. This way, you're not going through and picking apart, trying to find where your those weird pound symbol DIV and all that kind of stuff is. It just reports it right off the bat as a not applicable. In this case, it was a zero. It could be done. Okay, but if it were something where there was a division by zero or the number wasn't there, then it will report that pound NA instead of an error flag on the cell. That's just a little thing, and keep that in mind. Those if-is errors are actually a fairly common, fairly useful tool. For almost any formula you make, putting in that if-is error before you actually show it the calculation it's supposed to do gives you some saves you some time later fixing things in your spreadsheet. Okay, enough. I want a company. I want a company. What do you got? Something that is going to be profitable. Is not too weird. Not don't give me any Tesla crap or anything like that. What do you got? Anything? Yeah. Apple. Okay. I mean, the numbers are insanely large with Apple, but we can do an Apple. So we're going to go SEC.gov. And we're going to go filings, company filings, and a PPL, is it? AAPL? Oh, okay. I never could get it right. It's APPL or AAPL. Okay, now we're going to find the 10K, the latest 10K. Search for it, find it, search. There you go. Interactive data. Now, there are two ways you can pull this. I'm going to take the data, the Excel sheet, down into my own, into my own computer. You actually don't have to do this. You can pull the data straight from the website. I'm going to show you in, I think next week I'm going to show you how to pull data from websites without actually having to save the data or figure out how you can bring the data down. You can actually just go and tell Excel, this is where I want you to find the data, and it'll say, okay, we'll do it that way. But the upside of that is that you're not filling your computer with all of these files with financials and stuff like that. There's also the upside that whenever the data is updated, then your analytics sheet would update with the new data. The downside of that, I found out, and I'm going to actually show you this in just, is it next week? Yeah, next week. I actually was using data from the Federal Reserve System. And this was back when I was writing. I was a writer, a financial and economics analyst writing on the web. And I was pulling data from the Federal Reserve's website. And this was in the mid-2000s. In somewhere along the way, the Federal Reserve subtly altered the data so that it didn't say the same thing that it had said before. And I did not see it at first, and my website actually updated with the new data, which made my original analysis look insanely stupid. Fortunately, I've had saved the original data vectors, and I quickly altered it and brought it back to its original form. So you got to watch it. There are a lot, there doesn't seem to be any ethical problem anymore with changing data to suit the particular politics of the time. That was a troubling thing. I learned my lesson. So you'll see me almost always bring the data down and save it, archive it, so that I'm no longer, I don't have to worry about history being rewritten by interested parties. View the Excel document, save it. Edit. There it is. Now I want you, if you've got a computer, you're doing this with me. It's easy to look at this, but it's a lot better if you're actually doing it in real time. There is the analytics itself, and then there are the Excel tricks that I'm showing you along the way. Some of them I'm sure you know, some of them I'll bet you don't know. And I'm not going to show you. I mean, Excel is just like years of experience, and I'm showing you all the things that I've known, not all the things, but some of the things that I've found. Okie dokie. Now, one thing you want to do with Excel sheets, business, the first thing you do when in a business, if they give you an Excel spreadsheet, don't attack it. Do what we did in the Army. If you're in unfamiliar territory, step one, recon. Look around. See what the terrain looks like. Okay, I see that my first one is going to be the income statement. That's not what they call it here, but that's the income statement. The second thing is the consolidated. And I ask myself, how important is this one? It's not really important to me. So I keep going. Consolidated statement of comprehensive. Again, probably not important to basic analytics. And then I get this one. That one's important. That's a balance sheet. Notice again, though, that the company is required to file only to report in this place only 2 years of balance sheets. You could actually run real quick over to the 10K itself and grab one more year if you wanted it. We could do that, and I might do that later in the course. But for now, we're just going to live with what we've got here. Okay? So, but we do have a couple of years. Now, as far as other sheets are concerned, for other analytics, like cash flow, free cash flow analysis, we're going to need the statement of statement of owner's equity, but this consolidated statement of cash flows too. That's down the road. So going back here, first things first, I see, okay, I'm going to need this little mother, or this little thing right here, and then I'm going to need over here this consolidated balance sheet. Now, it doesn't hurt, it's okay, but you got to be a little careful about doing this. But it's okay for you to scoot this guy over so that it's here with the other one that you're going to use. Don't chase tabs. Move the tabs, rearrange it so that it works for you. Now, there are some managers in companies, they will just pee their diaper if you move tabs around. And that's that very bad thing in some management. We try to teach these management people, don't think that you know more than the users of the tools. It's the same thing that happens in manufacturing. The managers say, well, we want the tools up on the shelves, and we want this, that, and the other, instead of letting the workers put the tools where they can reach for them efficiently. Anyway, that's going to happen. I guarantee you that if you move that balance sheet around, someone in the company is going to say, well, that's not where it was originally. Put it back. And you say, you know, you got to be nicer. You say, bitch, no. But you see what I mean here? Put the tabs where you can get your hands on them as quickly as possible. By the way, it's not going to hurt your analytics. The next time you download this, well, won't they be out of order? Excel is reading those by the name of the tab, not by its position in order. So if it says balance sheet or whatever, well, it's going to find the balance sheet wherever it is and work from there. And when you scoot it over again, it's going to say, oh, well, that's a balance sheet. I know where to count, how to do that. So always keep that in mind. Make things where you want them. Okay, now, lock and load. This is a dashboard. Now, it's not a pretty dashboard, but it's a dashboard. We're going to make it prettier because when you produce this document, Do you ever draw just so you can draw for yourself? Do you ever work on Excel spreadsheets just because you feel like fulfilling your emotional insides with those Excel spreadsheets? No, didn't think so. You see, we do things for others. And in business, we are the manufacturers of products that will be used by information consumers. Different constituencies, upper level management, regulators, all kinds of different constituencies will use our products. We're not making them for our own emotional well-being. We're making them for someone else. Now, here's something that I should never, ever tell you. So if you repeat what I've said here, I will have to make you vanish, okay? And I can do that. It's a special potion I have. Okay. Most of the people around you are dumber than you are. Literally. You walk out on the street, you know, walk out. You're dumb. Man, you are stupid. Cray, cray, stupid. Don't do that, okay? But you assume that you are getting a really strong education and you've got the most incredible professor God ever made in me. So the bottom line is that you are creating information products for people, one, that don't know what those numbers actually mean, but they're going to try to ask intelligent questions anyway. Two, for people who do know what they mean, but don't really understand the mechanics of how to get those numbers. And three, for another group that really, they think they know the mechanics, but they really don't. So the three groups are the ones who have no idea, they're clueless. The ones who do understand what your final numbers are about. And then the third group that thinks they know how to create those numbers. Those three groups all have something in common. You don't want them seeing how you made the numbers. Unless it's someone above you who is really good, then you can open up, you can show. But your most frustrating things are going to be those second two groups. The ones who, well, the last group is the worst group. But you don't want to show the inside mechanics unless you are asked to show them. And you also want to lock your sheets where you do calculations. I won't do that today here, but I want to make sure you understand that locking your data sheets, where the actual data is being pulled from, and your formulas, that's going to save you the pain of having some super genius try to redo your work. A wonderful example of that was just last year at a company, a large company in this area. The chief of treasury had hired someone who said, "I've got Excel mad skills. I am a genius." He seemed to have been fairly bright, but he downloaded one of the crucial spreadsheets of the company, financial spreadsheets, multiple tabs, all over the place tabs, and they did not lock formulas. So what he did was he went in there and he decided, well, I can do this a lot better than, I mean, this spreadsheet had been building for decades. And he thought, oh, I can fix this and this formula is wrong and I don't see why you did that. Let's delete that. And then he saved the sheet. Oh, God, the file. He saved the file. In other words, he overwrote this file that had been building over all these years with his ingenious over just about a month on the job, 2 years out of college. He saved that sheet. He saved that file and overwrote the one that had been building over all those years. Needless to say, he was fired. And then they had to go back to the backup servers and find the one that was right before he had opened it and bring that back up. And that took several days and more than a little bit of manpower to do that. Don't let anyone play with your sheets. Unless they have authority and you know them and you trust them, to be able to understand what you're doing, and then they can make the suggestions. Lock your sheets, for God's sake. Okay, first things first. Go up here to year zero on revenue equals, and then you slide over here. Excuse me. Wait. I'm trying to get that tumor to cough up, and it won't. Equals. Okay. Now go over here. Grab the net sales. Okay? There it is. There's your dinner. Now, another thing. Don't format as you go along. Well, this should be in dollars. That's fine. We fix that later. Don't format. That slows you down. I used to teach transcription and proofreading. One of the hardest things in the world was to get transcription students to not correct their stupid errors. Don't you dare touch that backspace key. As a matter of fact, I had a program that would disable it. You get it done, then you go back and make it pretty. Okay, so the next thing what we're going to do, year, back 1 year. That one's going to equal, and we go back to that spreadsheet there. We are calling by reference to another file. Again, equals. Go back to that revenue and that other sheet and grab that. Now, you just keep going down the line. Again, don't play with the formatting. You can take care of that later. In the morning, first you wake up, and then you make yourself pretty, okay? You don't make yourself pretty as you are waking up. You do that later. Me, I use men's skincare products that are, you know, it's for Sasquatch, you know, and Yeti, and it works for me. But don't do things like formatting along the way. We'll have plenty of time to format, and we can do it very quickly later. Net income equals, yeah. Watch this, okay? By the way, I know you have to use a touchpad here, but when you're using Excel in your home or in your office, use a mouse for God's sake. I know you have to use a touchpad here, but it's really hard. So the first thing I do is I say, I'm putting it in this cell B4, right there, okay? Now I'm going to say equals, and then I'm going to say, all right, I want you to go over to that financial report. What the hell was I looking for?
Net income.
Oh, net income, yeah. I lost my track there. And then right here, just click on the net income. Watch what happens in the formula sheet. See, it actually names the sheet. That's why it doesn't matter the order they're in. It's calling by reference to the sheet name and then the cell. So it doesn't matter. So you pop that one, boom. And you just do it again. Equals. And then I'm going to go back over to the file. And then I'm going to just simply, where the hell is that net? Okay, there, right there. Boom. And then finally, one last time, equals. I could actually even make this faster than I'm doing it here, but Excel's being a little bit weird these days about that. Boom. Okay. See how you're calling? You're doing the calls? If you don't see how cool this is, you will as you get more experience. You can have, actually, in one case, this wasn't me. I was doing some consulting a couple of years ago, just light. I just went and they said, can you look at these Excel spreadsheets, see what's going wrong? They were getting some error flags. And I was just looking at this, and they were actually calling from like four different files because different divisions were sending their Excel sheets in. And so this master budget plan was calling from all these different files, and it was just so smooth, it was beautiful. And fortunately, there's a trick in Excel. It's not a trick. It's a facility in Excel called audit. And you can actually go through and say, all right, this formula, it's giving me an error. Walk it back every step until you show me the error, where the error happened. It's actually a very nice thing. If you've got something and you've got nothing about where the error is happening because you've gotten it from different places and calculations. Anyway, gross margin. Now, one thing notice, by the way, and I'm going to stop real quick here and point out something. Apple is one of those companies that uses the wrong name. This is actually gross income. It's not gross margin. SEC just doesn't care anymore. That's actually, the gross margin is the ratio. The gross income is the raw number. So I'm going to just change that and apologize to Apple for messing with their spreadsheet. But okay, gross income. But let me do this, okay? Gross margin. Now, if I look at that ratio sheet, gross margin is gross profit over sales. Okay, I got the formula now. Now I can crank it. Equals gross income divided by, oops, missed. There you go. Now, again, the numbers are just nasty and messy. That should be a percentage. But I'll worry about that later. I'll fix those little stupid things later. Now, I honk over here, and I do the same thing again. Equals, now I'm going to do the little calculation, go over here to the sheet, equals that number divided by that number. And there it is. Equals, and then I'm going to go over and I'm going to say, okay, equals that number divided by that number. Operating margin. Okay, let's go over here and have a look at the sheet. Operating margin is EBIT over sales. Again, EBIT is the same thing as operating income, is the same thing as earnings before interest and taxes, is the same thing as operating profit. They're all the same term. It's just that different companies call it different things. Walking it along here, so that, in other words, I'm going to look for operating income. Okay, so now operating margin equals, and I'm going to go over here and I'm going to find it. Operating income. I love Apple, though, because it's so clean, these sheets are, and they're reporting, even though they have a few things that are weird statements, it's still very very nicely laid out. Equals operating income over sales. There you go. Equals operating income for the last year over sales. And then finally, equals operating income for the 2 years back over sales. Boing. Net margin. Net margin is how much of every dollar makes it from the cash register to the shareholder's claim. It's the amount of every dollar that makes it from the cash register clear down to the shareholders. Equals, go over here, net income. Oh, I love Apple's sheets. They're so clean. Net income divided by sales. Well, 21 cents. Last year. That's actually not bad. Now, there is, I should point this out, there is not a holy grail of what a number should be. You see, because different industries have different typicals. The average, you look at an industry average, but sometimes that's not really a good thing to look at either, because sometimes your industry sucks. Or you are the leader of the industry, so your ratios are probably more useful than the industry average. So the looking at numbers on their own, there are a couple of absolutes, and I'll bring those up. But don't just look at this, oh, Apple, 21%, that's good. No, I'd have to see how that compares, that lines up with, say, a Microsoft or something like that. But anyway, net margin for 1 year back equals... and you just honk it out. Net margin, okay. That's cell C15 over cell C4. And then finally, equals, and then you go over here, cell D15 over cell D4. There you go. Now, next thing. Here's an interesting one. ROA, if we look at the formula sheet, return on assets is net income over total assets. Net income over total assets. So, net income, oops, let's put an equal sign there to start this off, equals net income, or rather, yeah, net income divided by, now we scoot to the balance sheet, total assets. Equals net income over total assets. Equals, now watch carefully what's about to happen. Net income over total assets. Oops. Watch. Oops, I didn't mean to. Equals if is error this mess. Then, NA. Otherwise, do the calculation. I'll do this a couple of times over the next few lectures. The trick is to write the formula, then copy it, and then go back and write equals if is error, open parenthesis, lay out the formula, close the parenthesis, and then say pound NA, and then control V, and that copies the form, pastes the formula back in. Watch how I did this again. I'm going to show you. Originally what I did was I said equals, and I said, oh, well, I'm just going to do this formula here. Yep. Net income divided by total assets. But I get that nasty thing that looks ugly. Now I'm going to go back and I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to copy that formula. Control C, just hold on to Control C. Okay, so now I've done that. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go clear back and I'm going to say, if, open parenthesis, is error, open parenthesis, that mess, then I'm going to want you to put in NA. Otherwise, do the formula. But I copied it, so I just hit Control V, pop. And I get an NA instead of this pound div slash zero. I'll do it again. Don't worry. I'll do this trick again. But what it does is, see that div, that pound div slash zero makes it look like you made a mistake in the spreadsheet. So that's why I tend to do, you want to use this because it looks like it's meant to be there, not applicable. But if you have that pound div slash zero, it looks like you did something wrong in the sheet. Now, ROE, going back to the formula sheet, return on equity is net income over common stockholders' equity. So we're going to go back here, ROE equals, now we go to the net income right here, slash, now we go to the equity, total shareholders' equity, right there. Wow, geez, whiz, whoa, hey, hello, equals one period back, net income. Was I doing one period back or two periods back? One, okay. Slash, now go over to the balance sheet, total shareholders' equity there. And this time, I'm going to be smart. Because I know it's not going to be there. Equals if is error, open parenthesis. Now I'm going to say, okay, net income slash total assets, shareholders' equity. Then put NA. Otherwise, now go back and copy the stupid formula. Control C, Control V. Oh, stop it. I didn't make a mistake. It's just playing with me. Okay? So in other words, in the case of Apple, if you consider the assets of the corporation in their totality as an investment portfolio, that portfolio last year earned about 12.88%. If you consider the owner's equity as a portfolio of its own, what the owners have paid in, then that portfolio of the owner's equity alone has earned a whopping 36% last year. That's what ROE means. Now, honking down through these, current assets is current ratio is current assets divided by current liabilities. So what I would do there is I would say current assets, and I'm just not going to, I want to save some time here. Whoops. I want to do this. Current ratio equals current assets, total current assets slash total current liabilities. This says that Apple, if it liquidated all of its current assets, it could pay its current liabilities 1.27 times over. Notice that this is not a percent. This is a times. Now I'm going to run down a couple of them. I'm just going to do a couple of years. Equals total current assets divided by total current liabilities. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. Equals total current assets divided by total current liabilities. Total current liabilities there. Quick ratio, you take out the inventory, because inventory really isn't worth much when you liquidate it anyway. So that equals, open parenthesis, total current assets minus inventories, close the parenthesis, slash total current liabilities. It can still pay its bills fairly rapidly. Equals, open parenthesis, total current assets minus its inventories, close the parenthesis, slash total liabilities. Total current liabilities, duh. Now, this last one is not in the book, and you probably won't see it in a lot of modern textbooks. It's called the burn ratio. It's old school. Realistically, if you had to pay all of your current liabilities immediately, the only thing that would really matter is pure cash. So the burn ratio, old school, says the hell with your inventories, your receivables and all that. If you really had to pay all of your current liabilities today, all you have is that money under the mattress. So this one just says, okay, equals, go find the cash. Cash. And divide that by your current liabilities. Total current liability. Not a very nice number there. They really did have to pay all their bills today. They got only 20, they could pay only 20% of them, basically. A year ago equals your cash divided by your current liabilities. Total current liability. Interesting that they've become less liquid by this measure. Actually, if you look at all these measures, Apple became less liquid over the last couple of years. Now, I'm going to do one last thing here for you. Percent changes equals, remember the formula for a change? Whoops. Is that minus end minus beginning slash beginning. You got it? End minus beginning over beginning. I showed you that like the first or second day. Now here's the nice little trick. Watch. First, drag, you click on that, you grab the little handle. See that nice little, it turns into a little cross. Honk that thing down. Just pull it down and the formula will come. Yo, yowza. Yeah, see that liquidity? Oh, look at that. Their net margin actually eroded a little bit too. Now, next thing, copy, paste the formula, and then honk it down. Now, it's going to bitch at me here. But notice, by the way, that if you have done an NA, then a calculation that had an NA will carry the NA. So that saves you getting errors other places too. And then last thing I'm going to do, you click on a cell, and then you bring it down. Hold down the control key. Every cell that you want to have as a specific format, you highlight that way. Format, currency, two decimal places, say okie dokie. Now, anything that you want, again, you just hold down the control key. Gross margin, these are all percentages, ROEs and all that. All of these, holding down the control key. And these are all percentages. That's not a percentage right there. Format, percentage, two decimal places. You see, you do it all at once at the end, and then you're not formatting everything along the way. I'll do a little bit of this at the end, but you got enough to get your homework done. But I'll do a little more of this on Tuesday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.